Hi there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Erin from Everlearning, Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, and myself, Ashley, from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, consent-based learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, Ashley. Hi, Haley.
Hello.
Sue, it's so good to have you back again.
Thank you, Erin, for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this ever since I got your invitation.
Oh, me too. I'm glad we figured out a time. So yes, we've got Sue Elvis as part of the conversation again today. And so our topic today is de-schooling. And Sue has just written a new book, which I think just became available on Amazon in the last week or two, I think, called The Unschool Challenge. And so Sue, that's like your third unschooling book. I guess you have a trilogy now, right? A trilogy of unschooling books. And so, I mean, you can obviously talk a little bit more, Sue. I know the book isn't specifically about de-schooling, but the reason that it kind of came to my mind, I guess, when I was thinking about the de-schooling topic is that when I had an opportunity to read through it, I was just thinking, it's such a great resource, I think, for people that are beginning their de-schooling journey. But I think even for myself, who's, you know, been at this for lots of years, there was still pieces that I was pulling from it. So I feel like it's just really good food for thought about living without school and kind of moving past some of those more schoolish ways of thinking. So I would love it if you would talk a little bit about your book and just maybe the origin of it and just kind of what your purpose was in writing it.
Well, thank you, Erin. The book, yes, I started writing that almost 3 years ago. So it took a long time, but I didn't intend to write a book at the beginning. When I was host of the community that you're now a host of, Erin, because as everybody is probably aware, I passed on the hosting of the community to you and two other beautiful people, and I'm concentrating on other things at the moment. But right back at the beginning, when I created the Stories of an Unschooling Family community, in April that year, I created the community, and in April, some of the members and I did the A to Z blogging challenge together. Don't know if you remember that, Erin. And we were posting our posts every day, A one day, B the next. And it generated such a good community spirit where we could all participate on an equal footing. And when April was over, I thought, what can we do now to continue supporting, encouraging, sharing with one another around a specific topic or something like that. So I thought, well, perhaps we can do some unschooling challenges together. I post a challenge every week on an unschooling topic and then invite everybody to go away and do the challenge and to report back how the challenge went. And I was hoping that we could share experiences, share our discoveries, go deeper into unschooling, support each other, answer questions, something that we could all do on an equal level. And also, those of us with more experience might be able to have a different perspective than someone starting out, but we would all respect each other's points of view and try to help one another. And so that's how the unschooling challenges began. And I remember the very first one was a real life maths challenge. And I challenged everybody to go out and discover some maths in their everyday lives, just keep their eyes open and then take photos of where they'd seen some maths, like on shop signs and church surface hours and opening hours. road sign, all those sort of things, Kindle books, and to take photos of them and then to upload them to the community. And we could talk about how mess is everywhere, because I felt that that was a stumbling block for a lot of people as far as unschool maths goes. If we don't teach our kids maths, how are they ever going to learn it? And we don't realize that our kids are surrounded by maths and they will use it when they have a need for it. And that was our very first challenge, and people participated and it was fun. And the next week I had to come up with another one. And I sort of went through my books for ideas about unschooling, aspects of unschooling that we could discuss together and that had a practical aspect to them. And eventually I ended up with a load of them and decided to put them in a book. So that I rewrote all of them. They're not exactly as they were in the community, and I added new ones, and I added personal family stories and other things to them, so they expanded into a book. But the purpose of the book, I think, Erin, is, I guess, I like to think of it as turning unschooling theory or unschooling principles into something real in our lives. People read books and then they say, oh, all sounds good, but what do you actually do? How do you actually unschool? Is it just about stepping back from our kids and letting them get on with their learning? Or is there more to it than that? And so I was hoping that the book will, well, I hope the book will, because we're at the early stages. People will, some people who want to know more about unschooling and how it works and understand the principles, maybe they'll learn something from it. Other people who really love the idea of unschooling but just don't know what to do, maybe there's something, a lot of things in there. People who got stuck in a rut maybe, and you think, oh, you know, yeah, I think we all do it, don't we? We think we've got unschooling worked out, and then one day we get up and think, oh, what do we do next? Or the spark has gone out of our days, or that type of thing. Even though we're unschoolers and have been unschoolers for years, we just get up and feel like stirring the pot a bit. Yeah. And the other thing I put into the book was a lot of homeschool record keeping ideas, because I think that that's a challenge of its own. I think sometimes if we had no such thing as homeschool registration, maybe more people would unschool. And so I wanted to address that as well. But it's further down your list, things that we were discussing earlier about things we could talk about today. I think that the book is not just about children, but about us as parents as well, our unschooling, our growth and development, maybe our confidence, because I think that if we don't address adults parenting and adult unschooling, that's the foundation of everything for our kids. We can't just go in there, unschool our kids without actually thinking about ourselves and where we are and the type of people we are and what our learning looks like. So there's a fair sprinkling in the book of things that parents can do regardless of children. And that's basically, Erin, where the book came from and what I hope people will get out of it.
I think one of the beauties, sorry, Erin, one of the beauties of your book, Sue, is that you, I think it's useful for any stage that you're at of unschooling. I think that's one of the really beautiful things about it. It's not just for new unschoolers or for really experienced unschoolers. It's for us wherever we are on our journey. And I think I really appreciated lots of the practical suggestions that you've got in there, and I feel like you can revisit these challenges, and every time you do that, wherever you are on your journey, you kind of see a fresh perspective,
when I was writing it, that was when I was editing it, that was one of the things I thought about, Hayley. I suggested in the beginning that everybody keeps a challenge notebook and writes down what they felt, what they did, what they learned, that type of thing. And I think that corresponds a bit to our posts in the community on the original posts, that we discussed things and we wrote things down. And I know writing is I do it all the time. I think my book says, write down your thoughts about this. And I think, oh, I'm not going to bother writing. I'm going to just think about it, turn the page quickly, And I think if we do write things down, as you said, Hayley, we can revisit the challenges at a later time, and we can reread what we, how it went the first time, and that have we moved on? Have had thoughts changed about anything? Are we feeling more confident? Have we seen things that we, or understood things that we didn't see or understand the first time around? So yes, I think that I really love how you said that, because you know, some books you just read and then throw in the cupboard and think, oh, send them down to the charity shop or something, recycle them and think, I've read that, done that. And I hope that the book will be around a little bit longer, a bit more helpful than that for each person that has it.
Definitely, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny, Sue, because when I remember when you, I can't remember, was the maths challenge the first one? It probably doesn't matter. But so I do remember that challenge. And I don't tend to be a person that, I don't know, I guess I go through periods of time where I write things down, but I write things down more because I think when I write, it helps me remember them, but I don't write them down very neatly in a place and keep, I might not be able to find it again. Let's put it that way. I write it more as I think, more than for the purpose of record keeping. But I remember the maths one, and it's funny, it was typing, not writing, but by participating in that, it just brought some things to memory and to life that I hadn't really thought about. So I remember, I think one of the ones that I put down about my family was one of my sons, he loved model cars. And so he would set them all up in a circle. And I started to realize that he knew his double digits from the race cars. And then I started to notice he, in his dramatic play, he would be talking about like ordinal numbers and cardinal numbers, right? Because he would be like, oh, the 88 is moving into fourth, but wait, so-and-so moves back into third. And I thought, like, those are concepts that, you know, would maybe be in a primary math curriculum. And so it was interesting, by writing that out, I started to identify some of those things. So I liked having those concrete challenges, because that isn't something that I would do naturally, but I do see, I mean, the whole thing about unschooling, it's not like it was a course and you said to us, now everybody has this challenge to do this week, because I probably would have resisted that. But just having like the offer there really made it, it just gave me an opportunity. And I think by writing that out, it made it more concrete in my mind. And I think, I guess I feel the same way about the book. It's like an invitation to challenge yourself. And, I guess when I think about de-schooling, it's interesting, because when I think about somebody, like if I was in a school environment and somebody was challenged, I mean, they're often worded maybe as a challenge, but really it's an assignment, I would probably be resistant. But the fact that it's like an invitation to work on something that you probably want to work on, right? Because we're all moving toward this with our kids. I find it really helpful. And I think, Sue, I've said this to you about your other books as well. I feel like they are helpful on two levels, because they're organized in such a clear, concise, concrete way that you can quickly find something on writing or something on screens or technology, or, you know, you can just look that up and there it is. And at the same time, if you have longer, or you're kind of thinking about something at a different level, you can also read it and work at it in a sort of deeper, slower way as well. So I think I had said to you, I expected to kind of just fly through the book, because I had seen a lot of the challenges in the community, but actually I found myself like working my way through it and really thinking about it, and even like imagining my own learning as a child. And so I love that there's kind of like those two. That's how I perceive it anyway. I see two layers to your writing.
I think that, and I was thinking about unschooling, about how there's a lot of us out there who are sharing our experiences and thoughts and ideas and encouragement. But really, unschooling is about every family's own journey. We can't unschool for somebody else. We can't, all we can do is offer like a helping hand, but everybody has to work it out for themselves. It's not like we're saying, do this, do that, do and follow the steps. Everybody has to put in their own effort. Like I was thinking, could we judge ourselves as successes or failures depending on our websites or our books or whatever? I'll go to her because she's more successful in sharing unschooling than someone else. But it's not that sort of thing, is it? That every single person has to, success or failure depends on what you're willing, how much it means to you, what you're willing to put in, how much you want to do it. You gather information, but then you've got to work at it with your own family and find out who you are, who your children are, what you want for them. And we're only a guide. My book is only a guide, suggestions. The real work has to be done by the people who really want to unschool or not. You could flip through it and say, oh, that looks like too much work. I won't bother with that. I'll buy a curriculum and I'll just continue on doing that, which is fine. That's a choice. But yeah, there's a lot of work involved, I think, in the book, especially as well. That's what we're talking about today. And it, the success of the book, I think, or success for the people who read it will depend a lot on whether people are willing to work their way through the challenges and do the work, if you see what I mean. As you, I said, they're just suggestions. Of course, we can discuss them. I was thinking, Erin, about how useful it was when we were discussing the challenges together as a group and having input from lots of different people. It wasn't just me talking through a book. So I think that a book study or something, or a community group around the book where everybody is equal to share and give feedback and say, well, see, you know what, that didn't work for me, but I discovered this, or that really was a helpful suggestion, but I've had this other idea, or you know, that sort of thing, or I didn't quite understand what you were getting at with that one. Could you explain it a bit more? And so a book, I think, is only the starting point of our relationships with our family, but also our relationships with everybody else in the community. Depends on how we use the book. We could read it from cover to cover in a day and just then put it aside. But yeah, it's not going to really affect us very much, is it? I just think about all the questions I wrote down that needed pondering and answering. And I thought, oh, look, people are going to look at them all and think, oh, well, you know, I'm overwhelmed by all those questions. But they don't all have to be answered in one sitting, do they? We can ponder a little bit at a time, take our time working our way through the challenges. We don't have to do a challenge a day or a challenge a week or a challenge a month. We can go as fast as slow as our needs and our interests dictate. So, yeah.
I can just quickly jump in before we move away from this. I just want to say that I actually find, I appreciate that you turned all these challenges into a book, Sue, because I feel like for myself, it's made the challenges more accessible to me, because I agree with everything you're saying. And I really like the idea of kind of like exploring the book, like what you were just describing, with a group of people, because I would see the benefits of hearing different examples of how people answered the questions for their own family. But I also love that I can have the concrete book in my hand so that when I'm in a place where I'm up for a challenge or two, I can quickly access it, go to what makes most sense to me at that time, do the challenge on my own, and then put it away for maybe a month or two and then come back to it. I think it just makes those challenges more accessible to me. Kind of like what you were saying, Erin, about like how a challenge can feel like an assignment if it's presented in a certain way, even if that's not the intention, that can be a roadblock sometimes. So I love the idea of having these challenges kind of presented in different ways. And the book in particular, I think, will be something that I will continue to go back to and like use a whole bunch and then maybe not use for quite a while and then pull it back out. So it won't be a book. My copy will not be passed on to somebody else anytime soon, I don't think. But particularly, I really appreciate that you did take the time, especially because you said you spent the past few years putting all that work to turn it into a book, I really do think that that makes it more accessible. And it's interesting because I'm at the 3-year mark with my unschooling journey. So it's like when you started writing this book, you've published it like in such a good time for me and so many others, obviously, to help where we are with the unschooling space. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ashley. It's lovely to get that feedback. I have to admit it. I could have written it in less than 3 years. I got stuck so many times. The lockdowns, COVID didn't help because I wasn't in a good mental state for some of that. I just wanted to isolate myself. Well, I was isolated. I didn't really want to isolate myself. I wanted to go out there in the bigger world. But I withdrew from a lot of things over that year because I just didn't have the mental health to, and that is something that's really big with me, especially we talked about that, Ashley, when I joined you from the last podcast, the episode I was involved in last time, about mental health and children's mental health and how we don't, almost it's a shameful thing to admit that you're having problems mentally and how we don't consider that with our kids who have a hard time, often have a hard time, and we don't recognize it. We just tell them to get on with life. I'm not saying we do it particularly, I'm using mm-hmm. the we, but that was another hard thing about writing the book. In the community, when I wrote the original posts, I wrote in we language. Shall we look for real life maths this week? Shall we do this? And I made suggestions in that sort of language where I was included. And so when I transferred all those challenges into my draft copy and started working on them, I didn't know whether to use we language because I thought, no, as a book, I'm not actually going to do this because I'm writing to a reader, you. And it felt so strange to change everything around to you. But I wanted to talk to each person reading the book. That's why I said you. But I didn't want to sort of say, you have to do this and you have to do that. And it's all about you. And it's all right for me because I just wrote the book and I know it all. And getting that balance, oh, it took me months and months of working on that and decision-making about how to present what I wanted to present to people with the right tone and the right language. And hopefully it worked out in the end, but that I gave up so many times because I thought I can't write this because it's not in the language that I'm used to using. I'm used to using we and making, I'm not telling people what to do, telling people about my experiences. And then hopefully they'll think, oh, look, I've learned something by Sue sharing that experience, but not having it pointed out what it was they learned. So yeah, that was hard.
I think you did a wonderful job with it, Sue. Having just read through it somewhat recently, I think you did a wonderful job with the language. And I definitely didn't see it or read it as, any type of rule book or anything. I don't think it came across that way at all. And I would maybe be sensitive to that. I think I'd pick up on if it gave that or if it had that vibe. I felt very much as if I had almost like an unschooling mentor or something, just saying, okay, you're obviously interested in unschooling or you're unschooling, you know, here's some challenges to help you and support you along the way. And there's so much in there that, even if I wanted to do all the challenges at once, I couldn't. Like I can really go in. I wrote a list actually of all the ones that I want to make sure I focus on first, because they're so applicable to us right now. But I really, I read it as much more of like, yeah, a guide that was very helpful. So yeah, I think you did a wonderful job on that.
Thank you. On my very last draft proofreading, when I was proofreading it, just before the very last stage, I lost my confidence. And I thought, oh, who am I to be publishing this book? It's not just purely my family stories, though there are lots of new stories in it. But I didn't want to come over like people think I'm an expert and who's she to say this because she doesn't know my family or that type of thing. And that's what unschooling, we're going around again in the saying that unschooling is very individual, isn't it? And we find our own pathway there. But then I thought to myself, oh, look, it doesn't matter if the book is a failure or if it's not quite what people want, because I'll get personal satisfaction from completing this project that I've been working on for 3 years. And it will give me satisfaction from seeing that book in my hand. And I think that's a lot of what unschooling is about, isn't it? About us fulfilling our dreams, doing our own work, using our talents, and not being afraid of taking a risk. And that if we hang back and say, well, I can't do this because I don't know what somebody will think of it, and what if they hate it, and what if they criticize, and oh, I'm not up to that, so I won't do it. And then that's not a very good example for our kids, as well as we're doing a disfavor to ourselves as well, because we won't achieve all those things that are important to us, and we won't be the people that we could be if we have a bit of, you know, sprinkle in a bit of bravery, and which sort of is what I was trying to say at the very last challenge about we've got to be brave. Be brave, whether it's do what our kids need us to do and unschool if we feel that's what we have to do, go against the crowd, or be brave and get up every night and see to our children, knowing that this is what they need and that it will all work out, or be brave and fulfill our own dreams. But yeah, just be brave. And I think so often we hold back other people's opinions, what the crowd is doing. We want to be accepted and liked. And what I find so funny is that we're all, I say all, but, you know, most of us, so busy trying to impress and be, people and be liked by people who are all feeling insecure, you know, that we're trying to impress a group of people who don't know who they are, who are all insecure and who all want to be liked and who all are worried about impressing other people. So we're all copying each other. And I think, why would we want to impress people who haven't really discovered who they are and where they're going? Why do we really want to be part of that crowd? But we all do it. But hopefully we'll save our children from those insecurities and those battles, that internal battles that we're always having. And I think that comes up to one of your questions later on, about de-schooling, Erin, and sort of dominating the conversation at the moment. But your questions about de-schooling were so interesting, and about how, I think one of them was about how we circle back, and it doesn't seem to matter how long we've been going, how we have to stop every now and then and face the same concerns and worries and questions that we thought we'd conquered ages ago. And yeah, maybe we'll save our kids from all that angst. They'll be a lot more confident and like who they are, and won't have the same kinds of battles that we have all the time.
Yes, and Sue, it's interesting, because when you're talking about, you know, just having that, I guess courage is the word, to go ahead and publish a book. I mean, you published, well, you have your unschooling books and you have your fiction books as well. And so I feel like that has to be, it's a step to put yourself out there. But I think with de-schooling, because originally most of us have the idea, I think most people have the idea that it's about the kids, and it's about letting the kids have, you know, enough time to decompress maybe from their school experience and discover who they are in a different way of learning and what their natural way of learning is. But then you're absolutely right that it does not end there. It, you know, there's the kids, but there's our part of it. And I think what ends up happening is so much of the work becomes our own. And that is such a good example to me, that idea of like forging ahead with something when you don't feel 100% certain of the outcome. Because I know for me, like in school, you don't want to put your hand up if you have the wrong answer, or you don't want to stand up and do your school speech if you haven't really got it all, you know, nailed down, or maybe you don't want to try out for a sport if you haven't had much experience in it. And I think that that's been a lot of like unraveling for me is, you know, what am I willing to try that might not be perfect? But there isn't, you know, in the quote real world, there's not really a right answer. So when we talk about like success and failure, how do we even, you know, there's no sort of national body on what, on who has successfully unschooled their children and who hasn't, or, you know, whether your book is successful or not. I mean, we look at numbers, maybe we look at like with something like a book with kids, maybe we look at outward markers of success, but really those are just very inside the box measures of success. So I think when we, for me, a lot of deschooling, it's like when I take those measures of success away, it changes the whole experience, and it makes it easier for me to try things if I'm not hooked onto it being like successful or unsuccessful. Or, and I mean, there's lots of talk about even if it's something isn't successful in your own mind, it's such a good learning experience. And that's like, that's just not certainly how I grew up in school. And I think for most of us, we probably didn't. So there's that hesitation of trying something if you think it's not going to have a certain outcome. So yeah, that's just kind of that's what I got thinking about, Sue. And that is part of deschooling, I think, as an adult is stepping out and moving away from that set outcome. And it's not even that linear. It's not kind of like we see it, you know, we deschool the kids and then we deschool ourselves, or we deschool. It just all kind of happens, doesn't it? In an interesting, we never really know what order things will happen in. Yeah. So, and I liked that about the beginning of your book. I think somewhere it talks about that. Like if you're in a space to work through this challenge by challenge, then that gives people the opportunity to do that. But it might just be something you dip in and out of, because, yeah, as much as we would like deschooling to be kind of a linear path, it really isn't.
Yeah. The two things that I thought of while you were talking, Erin, is that school, there's no room for failure in school. That if you get the F, you're in trouble. You know, the F grade, you fail, you do not finish. There's no room for failure in school. And as you said, we learn by failing. So that's ironic, isn't it? It just, you can't learn without failing, but you're not allowed to fail. And the other thing that I was thinking of was, you were saying about our role, that left to themselves, I think unschooling would be totally successful if kids were allowed to. The deciding factor in unschooling is the parents, not the children. Children will learn. Children are curious. It's the parents. Do we get in the way of our kids learning? Do we give them insecurities about what they're doing? That type of thing. So we have to work on ourselves first. That's, we need deschooling more than our kids need deschooling. Of course, it depends on the background of the kids and what they've been doing. But I do think that it's the parents who are the deciding factor. And quite often we don't talk about that. We talk about what we're going to do for our kids, and are they learning, and what are their goals, and are they going to get jobs? And we don't talk about us.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked on here a lot about relationships being so important to unschooling. And as I read your book, Sue, it just felt like a kind of relationships 101 sometimes. And it certainly isn't a rule book. And that's, you're definitely not telling us what we must do. But by asking so many pertinent questions, you get, at least for me, it felt like a really good way of reflecting on relationships. And there are some really obvious challenges that relate to relationships. Like, I think you've got one, haven't you, about spending time with your soulmate. And there's another one about trust in relationships and things like that. But I think even the challenges that don't seem to be about relationships have you know, really help us to reflect on how important those relationships are when it comes to providing a, you know, a positive environment for our children to be able to learn in. And I mean, I really like those, the challenges that you do about bringing more joy into your life and thinking about happy lists. And you mentioned delight as well, I think, and all those challenges were my favorites. And just like you, Ashley, I've got a list of yeah, the chapters that I want to go back to. And yeah, I think there was one about an art gallery that I thought, oh yeah, we haven't been to an art gallery for ages. Let's yeah, let's do that one. So it, I felt it was not only the relationships with my children, but really there's wisdom in there for all of our relationships, I think.
What I said earlier about the language we and you and how I wrote the book without necessarily going to do the challenges because I wrote them. But Hayley, your words there remind me that, yes, even though I probably won't go and read my own book, well, I might do. Yeah, those delight things and adding joy in are things that I need reminding about as well sometimes, even though I wrote the challenges, because we're very good, aren't we, of thinking we've got it all worked out, and then we let something slip. And that's when we need shaking up a bit and saying, oh, look, we haven't actually done anything joyful for a while. We've let worries of the busyness of life maybe take over. And so, yes, I will be looking for delights and adding joy in as well. So it wasn't quite true when I said that I've done it all and I won't be doing them again. Of course I will, because I think most of them that most of them I do anyway as such, because there's that challenge but near the end about translating, playing the educational language game. That happened one day, Saturday, only about 2 months ago, I'd say, just before I finished writing the book. And it just happened. I was having this conversation with my husband in the car and there was no kids around. And then I related that story to some local homeschoolers who wanted to know about unschooling. And I gave them that example about how we're surrounded by learning. And so it becomes sort of second nature to think about where's the learning in life and noticing it rather than, so much learning just happens and we don't even notice it. And to become aware of it and then to look at the world with awe and wonder and think, wow, what an interesting world, and that type of thing. And so, yeah, maybe what I'm saying is, would it be nice to get to the level where we just do these things automatically, but then again, sometimes we do slip because of our circumstances, tiredness, illness, other things that come in, and we forget to spend the time looking for the joys because all we can think about is the problems because we've got a lot of them, that type of thing. So it'd be good to remind ourselves to go back there and make a concerted effort to go looking for those delights again, or adding a bit of joy into our days that might feel a bit difficult at the moment.
And I think it always helps to have somebody else's perspective, doesn't it, to have new ideas. And there are a lot of practical suggestions that you give, which, you know, you're not saying you have to do this, but because you give so many different ideas, it is like your other two books. So I think you mentioned this before, Erin, it really is a case of you can either read them all the way through, but you can just pick them up and think, if you're thinking about, I don't know, you're anxious about screens or something like that, or maths, you can look for that. But you can also just open them and read them at any page. And I feel like it's one of those books that there's going to be something in your life that you can kind of relate it to, or it's going to make you think of something because it's, because you can see it from so many different angles. So I think it's really relevant like that as well.
Maybe, Erin, you, like we're talking about, things become sort of habits and natural to your life. And I guess that's where de-schooling, we're giving away those thoughts that we have and a different perspective on our lives and how kids learn and what relationships are all about. Until I guess we want to go from struggling through all the questions to how it just becomes part of our lives. And we don't even question whether we're unschooling is the right way to do things or not. That, just part of our lives.
Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that I had been curious about, just kind of like putting some language to or thinking through, is, you know, the difference maybe between de-schooling with an eye to maybe a more traditional style of homeschooling versus de-schooling with an eye to unschooling. And I think that, Haley, when you're talking about kind of opening a book and rather than going step by step, kind of opening and seeing what you can dig out of things. And I think that when you're de-schooling, well, either with an eye to unschooling or you just find yourself there, right? Because it depends on the person. That's where that, I think, when I'm talking about that other level in there, Sue, in your book and maybe in others as well, where you're looking for more. Because I think if you're de-schooling and you're pretty clear that you're doing traditional homeschooling, it really is de-schooling for the child. It's maybe helping them decompress from their school experience and rest, right? Like maybe rest for a little while so that you can start anew. And I think parents are really good at looking at their child as an individual and thinking, you know, what would work better, and kind of let's start fresh and let's start in a way that makes more sense for this child. And yet with unschooling, there's just a difference again, though, because it's not just decompressing. You're really relooking at a whole bunch of things. Because I think I had mentioned, like, now that my kids are older, and even for myself, I'm seeing everything through a different lens. Once you kind of really do that unschooling work, it's not just about whether your child has rested, you know, from their school experience, or you're doing things differently. And I have pulled up, I pulled up two different things because I was just interested in the wording. So Esther Jones, who has the Unschool Space podcast, she had put something on Instagram. She had talked about unraveling. And I think that word unraveling, to me, that's kind of where we get to over time, because we keep saying de-schooling, but at some point when you have been doing this for a while, it's not just about school. You're kind of unraveling and just looking at a lot of systems differently. So she had a quote on Instagram. So she said, unraveling as another way of looking at, oh, sorry, hold on here. This might've been my words. Sorry. I want to quote her properly. She said, when we unschool, we inevitably unravel old beliefs, habits, and patterns. And then she kind of had this message at the bottom where she said, be kind to yourself, unravel gently. So I liked that because I think, again, sometimes people come at de-schooling, ironically, in a schooled way. It's like, oh, I have this work to do. What are the steps? Tell me the steps to unschool. I have to get this done, right? And I think you see this sometimes when you see people speak. They're kind of coming from unschooling from the outside in. So it's like, you know, okay, we dropped these requirements. We dropped these requirements. We're still working on this. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that. And that might work for some people, but they're coming at it in that rule kind of based way rather than a principle based way. So I loved Esther's words there just about unraveling, and also her urge to, like, urging others to, like, just unravel gently. Like, it's not a race to de-school. And I just love that energy. And then I had also remembered an episode of the Exploring Unschooling podcast with Pam Larikia, and she had been doing an interview with, oh my gosh, I should have put, okay. So it's Lucia, and I didn't put her last name because I actually know her. And so in my head, I didn't even put her last name, but anyway, I'll find the episode and put it in the notes. But she was describing her family's experience when they started unschooling or homeschooling. And so she said, and so in the next 6 months, from then through the summer, through September, we did the version of deschooling that I think is common for any homeschooler or is recommended when you leave school. It's different from what I understand now about really deep unschooling, deschooling, where you're more dismantling. But I think of it more as decompression, where I didn't worry about curriculum. So just to give some context, I think she was talking about initially she was doing decompression, deschooling, right? So we've left school, we'll rest. We'll see what everybody kind of wants to do, and we'll just really chill out. And she described that as decompressing. But she talked about when she realized that they were moving in an unschooling direction, she talked about dismantling. And I thought that is very much what starts to happen. You start to just think about so many different things differently. And so that language around dismantling and unraveling, I think you get to a point where we keep calling it deschooling, but it really almost becomes more dismantling or unraveling. So
you just made me think of something there, Erin, though, about the you were talking about people taking things away. And we've been talking a lot here at the moment. My daughter's vegetarian. She'd like to be vegan, but there are quite a few products that she's trying to find alternatives that she likes. So vegan alternatives that she likes. And we've been talking a lot about how, you know, it's really important to kind of add things in rather than necessarily taking them away. Because, you know, if she takes too many things out of her diet, then obviously that may leave her with not enough vitamins and not enough, you know, calories and all that kind of stuff. And it kind of, I don't know why, but that struck a chord with me about the whole taking things, you know, when you start unschooling or deschooling and unschooling, the need to take so many things away. I think it's really important, though, that we think about what we're adding in. And I guess those things that we've just been talking about, Sue, the joy and the delight and the relationships, and those are the things that we need to add back in. So it's kind of, it is a lot of dismantling and unraveling, but all of that on its own is maybe not going to get us to a great place unless we have all those positive things that we're adding back in again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that what you're describing, Haleen, I don't know if I've thought a lot about this, but I think when you're somewhat new to unschooling and you're kind of at more so at the beginning of your deschooling process or deschooling journey, you kind of get that happens, right? You're kind of taking things away, but you don't know what you're supposed to be putting back in. You hear people talk about that, like, well, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do as the unschooling parent? And unless you have other like unschool families in your day-to-day life, where are you supposed to gather that information? Where are you supposed to do your research and learn what it looks like to be an unschooling family or an unschooling parent? And you can feel lost. And it's by connecting with other unschoolers in whatever way, or books and blogs and I'm thinking about both your blog, like your blogs, and how those resources are what, and again, it wasn't like, if you want to unschool, you have to do this. It was just more so, here's what other unschool families are doing. And whatever resonated with me that I thought like would work for our family, I started adding in. And so, like, off the top of my head, the recent example that I got from you, Haley, was the joy lists. And you know, in the past probably couple of months now, that's been a very, we've definitely added that into our lives. And I don't think I would have thought of that just on my own. It was having come across it from you. And it just provides, more guidance. Because I think, when you're deschooling, you're removing things and you're like, but I'm supposed to be doing something, right? So those things are really helpful. I think there's a lot of examples. And Sue, like those challenges, I see a lot of that, like the list that I wrote of things I want to go back to. It's not a list of things that my kids have to do or will do, or that I'll even suggest to them. It's what I'll be doing. So it's going back to what you were saying about the effort that, we take, that we put in. And I think that's what I was saying with the book being so great too, is our energy levels go up and down, right? So sometimes, like right now, I'm feeling really energized where I am and I'm wanting these types of resources. So that's when I'll go to the blogs or I'll go to your book, Sue, and I'll pull those things and I'll use up a lot of my energy doing those things and I'll get myself in a place where I'm feeling better as an unschooling parent. I won't feel so lost. I'll be a little bit more clear on what, like how we want to continue down this unschooling path, if that made sense.
Yeah. When we started unschooling years ago, right at the beginning, we were unschoolers. Didn't do it properly, put it that way. We thought we were unschooling, put it that way. Cause everybody around us was unschooling. And I thought, look, we're unschooling too. But what you were saying about being in a vacuum, taking things away, obeying the rules, I felt that so much as a young parent, as a young, hopefully unschooling parent, that to obey, I had to obey the rules. I couldn't interfere with this. I couldn't interfere with that. I had to step back. I'd make sure I didn't do this, that, and the other. And I thought, but what do I do? What you were saying, Ashley, what do we do? And books, we had no internet, so we had none of the books and blogs and social media that we have available today that you're using. Unschooling books were very few and far between. Homeschooling books were, but unschooling books in particular. We did have John Holt's magazine that was still being published. I can't remember what it was called now. Growing Without School, maybe. But anyway, I got hold of this book and it was a bit further down the track and it was a book by lots of different people with their unschooling story or homeschooling stories, unschooling stories. And this unschooler, she got up every day full of the joy of life with her children. They got up late. They made pancakes, I think. I'm vaguely remembering the details, but the detail I do remember is they got the skates on and they skated down their driveway to get the mail and they didn't seem bothered about anything. And I thought, well, I don't like getting up late and we don't like skating, but what do we do? You know, it sounds like fun and they're all enjoying themselves, but we're not that family and I don't understand why they're doing all that. And that's the thing I think is we don't understand why. So it's all very well taking the rules away and trying to de-school what we don't want to do at school, but why don't we want to work that way? What's wrong with that? That's what we need to explore, I think, as de-schooling. What do we want for our families? What's important? And why don't we want to continue the pathway that we're going down? What's wrong with it? Understand it a bit more, question. And that takes time, doesn't it? As you said, Erin, about the unraveling or the dismantling, it takes time. And I love what you said about being gentle on ourselves, because it's not something that happens in a week, a month, a year. We're still, as you, one of your questions, Erin, about circling back and having older, being older and schoolers and having older children, that sometimes we have to go and revisit these things because unschooling is just so complex. It's not like school at home, maybe you do this, you do that, you read these books, go by that curriculum. It's about life, our relationships, and we don't understand those totally. We keep learning about our own lives, don't we, and who we are and who our people are and what love's all about and how we can connect with others and what our purpose in life is. And those questions don't get answered quickly. They're a lifelong thing. So when you wrote that question, Erin, I thought, well, yes, it would be surprising if we didn't stop every now and then and de-school a bit further and describe a bit more about what unschooling is all about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Ashley, you were talking about you may be reading different things and you I can't remember how you worded it, but you know, it's you're reading different people's experiences and you're thinking, well, this, you know, I could see this working for us, or I could see this maybe wouldn't work for us. And I find too, those things are good to just kind of, you just put things in the back of your head. And even if they don't work in the moment, it's, I don't know. I find sometimes I'll pull things out and I'll think, oh, I remember reading about that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And at the time I couldn't imagine that. And now that actually sounds kind of interesting, or I could see one of my kids being interested in that. And so it's that idea too, of just like gathering tidbits of experience and ideas. And there's no time frame. There's no exact way that you need to use them. And maybe we'll gather, you know, as you said, Sue, like maybe the family that skated down the driveway. I can't remember. I think because they got up late and skated down the driveway. I mean, that's probably not ever going to be a fit for you. But that energy, you can still pick up on pieces of it, maybe. And it's still kind of fun just to think about the different ways that people live. So I think when you free yourself from, you know, this is how, so, because a lot of people ask that, how do you homeschool? How do you unschool? What are the rules? What's the technique? And as we all know, it's very hard to answer that question. It's really hard to answer that question. Although Sue, I think that there is such a place for this type of book, because it's not that you're telling people how to do it, but you're inviting them to look within themselves, to imagine different aspects. And I think that that is a real step, because as much as we can sort of sit here and say, oh, people want to know how to do it, but there's really no way to explain it. Like, how frustrating is that, you know, for people to keep hearing? So I think to at least have something that gives people an opportunity to maybe work away at something, or kind of hold that possibility, is really helpful, especially for people who do find it helpful to have like a framework or a bit of structure.
Don't you think that questions are a wonderful way of sharing and exploring, because you're not telling anybody how to answer the question, but when we're provided with a question, it does start us thinking about things. And yes, I agree with that. Or I don't know, I've never thought about that. Well, let me think about it a bit more. And it's not really telling people what to do. And I was thinking about how questions are a great way to relate to our children too. As long as we're willing to listen to their answers and accept their answers, and we don't expect them to give us the answers that we're hoping for, maybe that we haven't got a preconceived idea about what the right answer is, but how questions really show people that you're interested in them and their opinions, and you will accept whatever their answer is. And I think that's a great part of unschooling, is being able to question and listen to the answers.
And it's interesting, because in the community, somebody had mentioned just in passing, because Sue, we had done a book study of one of your books, I guess it was Curious Unschoolers, and we didn't necessarily have another book study planned, but in one of, I guess it was a topic, and in one of the comments, somebody mentioned John Taylor, I'm never sure if I'm saying this right, John Taylor Gatto. I'll say Gatto for now, some of his work. And I can't remember if she mentioned studying his essays or his books, or if, anyway, so we ended up talking about it a little bit. And several of us have started kind of reading, and it's very organic the way it's happening. So people are kind of reading as makes sense for them. And then we've incorporated it into some Zoom meetings. And it's interesting, because I read his work pretty early on in my journey, because that was one of the things that was available. Like, as you said, Sue, even when I started, like, there was internet, but there wasn't this whole big online world. So, you know, it did make sense to buy books or get books from the library or whatever. I remember reading his work, and it was very helpful for me to kind of feel some clarity about the decision not to choose school. So I guess at that time I saw it as maybe an anti-school book. I mean, I think it could quite, it could be described that way. I mean, it's pretty. And so I needed that in that moment. I needed that kind of moment of time to really bolster my decision. And then I didn't read it again for years and years and years. I just kind of thought, well, I've gotten past that. I don't need to, I've read that, you know, check. And then when she mentioned it, I thought, well, this could be interesting. Actually, sorry, let me backtrack a little bit. One of my kids was in high school for a couple of years. And it's interesting because I wouldn't have picked that book up again. It had been years and years. And then just watching how that school system played out, I started reading his essays online and I was like, yes, this makes so much sense. Like, it was like a lifeline to me again. And then that again was a few years ago. So I had said to her, well, why don't we kind of see if anybody's interested? And we've kind of organically been reading his work. And the discussions we've been having are, we kind of weave his stuff in and out. It's not just solely about his work, but it is amazing. Like the whole other level that I'm looking at this, like when we talk about dismantling and I can't remember the other word, unraveling, it's helping me so much now with older kids. So it's funny how we think, we have these, I do anyway, oh, I've read that person's work, check. And I've done that work on this piece of deschooling, check. And then this stuff kind of like circles back around. And I am, I'm reading it so slowly because it feels like every couple of paragraphs I'm thinking, I'm relating it to things. And but it weaves in and out of, so we're talking about unschooling, but we're also talking about all kinds of different things, you know, politically, community-wise, that all kind of weave together. So I'm just enjoying that so much, just coming back to this early piece of reading and seeing all these different pieces in it. I think I might've gotten off track, Sue. I can't remember what you were saying, but I know originally it had this idea of circling back. So that's where all this thought came from me. But yeah.
I was also thinking, Erin, about when we do circle back, how that is really good. That we look at that as a negative. Haven't we got past that yet? Haven't we gained enough confidence yet? Are we never going to feel comfortable totally about unschooling or whatever we're thinking about? And then it occurred to me that it is really good to stop, question, ponder. Sometimes things happen. Yes, you might read something that catches your attention and you start to think, oh, well, perhaps that's right, and perhaps I'm wrong. Or you hear a story about a friend and you think, oh, I thought I was immune to comparisons, or whatever it is. Or you get, your child is older and they do something that you weren't expecting. And it's good to stop and reread, rethink, ponder. And then move on ahead again, back to where you were, because we never go off ahead at leave. We never set off again at the same point. We always set off with more, because we set off with greater commitment. We say, yes, it was good to stop there and ponder. Now, I'm absolutely sure that I'm doing this, absolutely sure, you know, until the next time, that we're doing the right thing. And then you go off with renewed confidence, renewed commitment. And you know, it's a continual growing process, isn't it? It's not a once and for all process. And so I think if we look at it that way, because we can feel a failure sometimes, oh, look, unschooling's not working. I'm questioning it again. I've got to do something else. I've got to go find that perfect homeschooling method. Not realizing that this is just a natural part of life, is that we stop, ponder, pick ourselves back up. We've learnt more, we set off again. And once we realise that, we don't have to worry every time those doubts come. We just say, we'll work through them, we'll learn something else, we'll peel back the layer of unschooling a bit further. And we've got greater commitment, greater love. We've seen something we didn't see before. And it's not a problem. It's actually good. And that we're not going to jump off the unschooling ship and start all over again looking for something new. But then we just continue on. And yeah, that's thought I had about that, that we, like being gentle, you were saying, Erin, about being gentle on ourselves, not beating ourselves over the head with, look, we've wasted all these years and we could have been doing something else and now it's too late and, well, I never get this right and I should be far ahead by now. But to, no, this is fine. We're learning still.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. Erin can be found at Everlearning. And I, Ashley, can be found on Instagram at AshleyAsMama and at Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.